Dan here. Before we get into the show, I want to tell you about FanDuel. The NFL season isn't over yet. If your season-long fantasy football league just isn't cutting it, get your mojo back at FanDuel.com and pick a new team every week. Joe Watson from New York played fantasy football on FanDuel for less than 2 weeks last season.
Joey Watts.
That bro won over $30,000. Join him and hundreds of thousands of other users who have already won money. FanDuel.com is the leader in one-week fantasy football leagues. The money is real, like Wes and his face and his voice, a beautiful man. Entry fees start at just $1. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use the code AROUND and sign up now. They have a new user special. It's ending soon. FanDuel will match your first deposit dollar up to $200. That's $200 free. Offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code AROUND. Don't forget to use the code AROUND. FanDuel.com, where every week it's a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today.
The Around the NFL Podcast breaks the internet.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I get that cultural reference, break the internet, but that would mean that someone would potentially pose nude on a magazine cover, Kardashian style.
Well, that would be distressing. If it were one of us, that would
right.
That's not going to go well for the viewer.
No, it would not break the internet. I don't think we'd get a big click-through rate. I don't know what we're talking about. This is week 14.
Wes would clearly be the person if anyone was going to do it.
Oh, for
Wes.
Certain. For
Guy's
certain.
Got a body that doesn't quit.
What the hell's going on out here?
Week 14, Sunday, another week of the NFL, and we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel as we get closer to the end of the regular season. Not to make it sound like, you know, it's a bleak affair getting through the football season, but what I mean is we get closer to playoff football in January. It's almost upon us. And this week, guys, with some things tightened up across the NFL, this is going to really come down to the wire.
Yeah, you say light at the end of the tunnel. I think for some teams, it's there is no light and it's over.
Who could you be referring to?
Well, I mean, a handful of teams. Some of them closer to my interest than others.
Quiet storm.
It's over.
It's not over. Give me a break.
We'll get to that game soon enough. But why don't we start with the defending Super Bowl champions who went to Philadelphia, gentlemen, on Sunday. The game of the week on Fox. You had Joe Buck there. You had Troy Aikman there. And they took care of business. They stay hot.
That was the two big exciting things about the game. Joe and Troy.
Joe and Troy. The Seahawks knock off the Eagles 24-14 in Philly. This is a game the Seahawks outgained the Eagles 440 to 139. Whoa! That's domination. Wes, the Seahawks are rounding into form at the perfect time. Am I right?
We've talked about this for a few weeks in a row now. This defense is for real. They are every bit as good as they were last season, perhaps even better. They limited the Eagles to 139 yards today, which is 61 fewer than any other game with Chip Kelly as their head coach.
Chip Kelly, the genius, the man who came up with offensive schemes that no coach could defend and no players could stop, apparently. And also quarterback-proof offense Chip Kelly created.
They're 9-4 with Nick Foles
Mark
Sanchez at quarterback, not playing particularly well. Yeah, give me a break.
I've got news for you. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is facing the Seahawks defense. They're going to shut down every quarterback.
In fairness, they have just played Stanton, Kaepernick, and Sanchez, not exactly a murderer's row. It's fair to point that out.
They dropped a bomb on them, though.
Yes. You said the same thing last week, and now they went in and dropped a bomb on a guy averaging 35 points a game.
Sanchez had been playing pretty well. He didn't even throw for 100 yards in this game, and he had one interception in particular.
He wasn't terrible today. The Seahawks were just that good. They took his receivers away.
He had one interception in particular that gave me horror flashbacks. K-Rich behind the glass, we talked about it when I came in. It reminded me of some of those Sanchez mistakes in New York where you're just trying to make something happen, just threw it up for grabs. It was a huge play. It came right after a fumble recovery by the Eagles.
The game was over by then. The Eagles couldn't move the ball.
With Seattle, I mean, their defense has been peaking of late, but the offense is, passing game has been skittish week after week. What's going on with Russell today? I saw your write-up, and it seemed like he did quite well.
He was the best player on the field, and we've talked about they can throw their playbook out. Just get rid of it because it doesn't matter. Their best play is the play breaks down, Russell Wilson plays sandlot football, finds the open receiver, runs around, and just his improvisational skills are top-notch.
Well, we've talked about during the week. I think Maxwell and Chancellor being back is huge. The biggest change. I mean, Bobby Wagner being back is huge, too. But you go from a Legion of Boom that was by far the best in the league last year to they were just okay. And then with these two guys playing well, they're now the best again.
Maxwell had an awesome game today. It seemed like he had five or six third down plays where he ended the Eagles' drives. Just on third downs alone, he was all over the place.
Wes, it sounds to me that you believe the Seahawks are playing at such a level that maybe the Eagles don't even have to put too much stock in this game. They were just not going to touch a team playing, even in their own building. I'm sorry, I understand, and you saw the game, but this is a pretty bad loss when you're in your building and you're in first place and you basically get outclassed.
I don't think it matters. I think the Seahawks are that good. They're going to do that to anyone they play against right now.
Well, that matters because they could be playing again.
Unless it's in Lambeau. Look, I think the Eagles are still the NFC East favorites. I don't think this means the Cowboys are better than them just because they lost to the Seahawks. The Eagles' defense played pretty well in this game. There were eight or nine broken plays where Russell Wilson got away with it. Structure broke down. But Fletcher Cox, Eagles' defensive end, dominated the run game. Connor Barwin played well. Michael Kendricks was all over the place. I think they have a more complete team than the Cowboys.
We were talking about whether the Seahawks would even make the playoffs, 4 or 5 weeks ago. Now you have to consider them a favorite to get a bye, because this game was huge for the bye. Because if Seattle can run the table now and win the division, they'll get that two seed, or they should.
That's why the season is the perfect length, because it shatters the myths that we buy into in week 8 and 9. Seattle is becoming what we thought they'd become.
They got to pass the Cardinals first, who we'll get to a little bit later.
They'll do that.
Let's move on. Andrew Luck threw a 1-yard touchdown pass to T.Y. Hilton with 32 seconds to play, rallying the Indianapolis Colts to a 25-24 win on Sunday over the Cleveland Browns. Oh, Mark. Mike Pettine showed his faith in Brian Hoyer, but the quarterback didn't reward his coach, did he?
Yeah, I think that's going to set the city on fire this whole week, because Hoyer, who his play obviously has been, nosediving over the past month plus, just an absolute stinker today. You got one of the best defensive showings by Cleveland all year. They put up two touchdowns on their own, got to Andrew Luck all day long, punished him. You can't hold the Colts down for an entire game, though. And as they started to creep in, all they needed Cleveland to do with Brian Hoyer was maybe score one touchdown on offense, and he couldn't do it. I mean, it's just like you have to wonder if Manziel were in there, if he could have generated one or two clean drives. This would have been a huge win for Cleveland. It was the opposite.
I mean, you lost the Browns lost the game where the defense scored 17 points. Really.
Oh,
You have two touchdowns and then another field goal that they set up where the offense didn't do anything. They basically just kicked the field goal.
They left points on the field in the first half, right? I saw one tweet where someone wrote that the Browns should be up 24-7 right now. I believe it was 14-7.
Well, Hoyer, I mean, they had some energy and there was some rhythm to the offense early. Hoyer gets them right down into the red zone. Throws an interception in the end zone. It's like you just can't do this week after week.
Here's Brian Hoyer over the last 5 weeks. Fewer touchdowns than J.J. Watt.
Yeah, and he's looked that bad.
It is funny how when you play poorly really affects kind of the narrative of the season. I mean, imagine if Brian Hoyer played for the first 3 or 4 weeks like he did the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, we talk about him like he was Blaine Gabbert or something. But he started out solid. And then the nosedive.
It probably works for Cleveland, though, in the sense that if their season is over in terms of making the playoffs, we're not there yet, but
if
it's Manziel time.
But here's the thing, and that's why Manziel should have played this week, because they couldn't afford to fall 7-6 and now hope to win every game and catch breaks to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Pettine got too loyal, and maybe this is something he'll learn from as a young coach, but Manziel was the right move this week. Now, I would assume that unless something's happening behind the scenes, Manziel will start next week, but it might be too late for the season.
I think you're right. I think, though, there might be something going on with Manziel a little bit behind the scenes that we'll maybe find out after the season, because Pettine pulled a ton of people, and overwhelmingly, they wanted Hoyer to play.
Let's give Andrew Luck a little bit of credit here,
He deserves it.
Even though he got from what I hear, is a pretty bad game for 57 minutes. 90-yard drive to win the game, a bunch of third and longs on that drive. That's kind of why he's Andrew Luck.
T.Y. Hilton went next level. I mean, Joe Hayden had the game of his life, but Hayden also gives up the big play occasionally. T.Y. Hilton was the guy over and over keeping that offense afloat.
That kind of reminds me of when I was watching that last drive of being a young Jets fan when Jim Kelly was in that division and Marino was in that division. You were just a lesser team trying to hold on, and you knew that guy was going to rip your heart out.
Oh, that's
and
luck.
That's exactly how it played out.
The quiet storm wasn't so quiet today?
No, he wasn't.
He looked over there, and at one point he said, I want this one.
Yeah, he was hooting and hollering, different effect today.
Had they won, they'd be in a great position, and they're now in a disastrous position. They really are.
I don't want to see the light go out in your eyes, though, because of this game, because I liked when
you were recovered alive. Well.
You recovered very well.
You know, I'm a mature individual on many levels, so I'm not going to take it out on you guys, which I probably have done in other weeks.
All right. Wow. All right. Well, good job, Mark. Elsewhere in the AFC North, the Steelers took the division-leading Bengals to the woodshed. I don't even know what that means. In a 42-21 win at Paul Brown Stadium, Cincinnati is now just one half game ahead of the Steelers with three games to play. Chris Wessling, how the hell do we make any sense of the Steelers?
I think the saying is supposed to be behind the woodshed because that's where you take care of business when you're living down south or on a farm.
Oh. Yeah, it's a small structure filled with firewood.
If you want the fight to happen outside of other people's vision, so you take them behind a woodshed to do your private business.
So the guy that takes a person to the woodshed, not taking it far enough, you got to get behind it.
I think it's behind
the woodshed. Okay, what's up with the Steelers? How can we ever figure them out?
They're Jekyll and Hyde. I think we talk about the Broncos' ability last year to just blitz opponents and rain points upon them. The Steelers have that capability too, and they entered the fourth quarter down 21-17. And scored 25 points over 10 minutes to just end the game. But I don't know that we can trust them. They could just go into Atlanta next week and lay an egg.
It feels like the Ravens are the most trustable team, but Pittsburgh's the team I wouldn't want to deal with in the playoffs because when they have one of these peak games on offense, they're going to drop 40 points on you. And Bengals, I mean, the Bengals can't deal with that kind of thing.
And I mean, they dropped 32 points in the second half on the Bengals defense that we thought that has been playing pretty well lately.
Bengals defense has no pass rush. They're questionable against the run, and they have no pass rush to speak of. That's a problem. I think that will haunt them the rest of the way. And they have a hard schedule at Cleveland, home to the Broncos, and then at Pittsburgh in a season finale that might just decide the division. I don't know if I trust the Bengals. The Steelers have the edge now in that division.
Here's the perfect example, and this is the game. This is the good Steelers, right? Statistically, Ben Roethlisberger, 25-39, 350, three touchdowns, no picks. Le'Veon Bell, who's a superstar at this point, 26 for 185 and two touchdowns. Antonio Brown, typical, 9 for 117. Martavis Brown,
Bryant,
4 for 109 and a touchdown. Le'Veon Bell added 6 for 50 and a touch receiving. I mean, there's so many weapons at play. It's hard to figure out how they could have so many stinkers this season.
Le'Veon Bell's coming off one of the best three-game stretches in the history of the NFL. I believe he has 711 yards from scrimmage in the last three games, which is second only to Walter Payton, had 740-something in 1977. If you're starting a team and you can have any running back, Le'Veon Bell's your guy.
Yeah, and by the way, on the Cincinnati side, A.J. Green did everything he could, went over 200 yards with a touchdown. Mohamed Sanu, is it just me, or has he really gone silent after a really nice run earlier in the season?
He came up huge when they needed him with A.J. Green out, but he's not playing as well as a second fiddle and has dropped quite a few passes the last few weeks. But, yeah, I think the Steelers, they have the edge here.
The Ravens also gained ground in the division, exposing the Dolphins in a 28-13 win on the road. This is dominating efforts by Elvis Dumervil, who had 3.5 sacks. And they got another strong game from Joe Flacco, who's been earning that money of late. Greg, was the AFC North's best team playing in Miami on Sunday?
It was. I mean, we've thought this for much of the year. I can't believe I didn't take the Ravens in this game. But their offense, when they are humming, are a lot of fun to watch. I mean, Joe Flacco is a top 10 quarterback this year. You know, not by much. I mean, it's right towards the end. But for the most part, he's played really well. Gary Kubiak has changed that offense. They fall down 10-0 in this game. Totally dominated in the first quarter. And after that, it was just a bloodbath. And it started up front. Elvis Dumervil just destroyed Dallas Thomas all day. Terrell Suggs had a big day. And then the Baltimore offensive line, on the other hand, really kept Joe Flacco clean. It didn't look like two contenders. It looked like one team that was headed towards a playoff and another that's headed towards another kind of December swoon.
One thing about Baltimore, you know, Pittsburgh, for what we just mentioned about them, their defense can be a major issue week to week. They've got issues there. Baltimore secondary looking better today or what?
No, I mean, they lost. It's crazy. They came into the game. They lost to Lodinata to suspension. You know, Jimmy Smith's been out. Their secondary's been banged up. And in the first half, they lost their two starting cornerbacks. And it didn't matter. Danny Gore went out. Anthony Levine went out. I mean, these aren't big names or whatever, but they're the guys on the field for them, so they must be their best players. And it didn't matter because Tannehill steps back. They started sitting on the short routes. When those are taken away, he just kind of freaks out a little bit. And, you know, to his defense, the pressure was getting to him very quickly.
For all the attention the Cowboys' offensive line has gotten this year, the Ravens' offensive line, when they've had all five starters healthy, has been the most dominant offensive line in the NFL.
They move people, and the running game, it took a while to get going, but once it did in the fourth quarter, it was just like a rainstorm falling down on Miami. It almost felt like a team that, I don't know if they gave up or anything, but they were just physically dominated down the stretch. You got Jared Odrick yelling at Joe Philbin on the sideline.
What was that about?
I don't know. It's going to be some sort of story this week. Philbin, in typical Philbin fashion, just kind of stands there as no reaction.
He looks like a man carved out of like an IBM executive's office. I don't know what to make of that guy. One thing with Miami, though, and this week 14 of any of the weeks so far, I feel like it said, here's a couple teams that are total pretenders, and that's the Dolphins.
I didn't think that, obviously, going into this game, but I thought this was a good defense, and they haven't played like a good defense for a month. They don't have a pass rush. Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon and that whole group, they were just as big a problem, if not a bigger problem, than the run defense today.
I feel like we might have talked about this before, but to your point, Mark, is there any coach active in the NFL right now you would want to have a drink with less than Joe Fieldman?
No, I'd have a drink with anyone on the planet.
Well, I know you would, but I'm saying, is there anyone that you would choose – Joe Philbin over?
No, he's got to be in the power rankings of coaches I'd least like to drink a beer with. He'd be at the top of that list. Seems rather dull. I'm not sure where the conversation will go.
Mike McCarthy, probably a little dull.
No, I think he'd be all right.
All right.
That guy
I got another Mike. Mike Smith.
No,
I like Mike Smith, maybe. I'm going to go Mike McCoy. There's your Mike you don't want to drink with.
Oh, wait, Bill Belichick.
No way. I would love to hang
Billy's
out with Belichick.
Awesome. No.
Oh, well,
he'd
oh, sorry.
Jerk. He'd be a creepy, crusty old man.
My choice would be Tom Coughlin, because what if I showed up to the bar like 5 minutes late?
The Ravens, after winning this game, it's crazy how much a week changes. I mean, they were a game and a half back a week ago, but now the Bengals lose. They're within a half a game, and they get Jacksonville, Houston, and Cleveland.
More importantly, has Wes ever showed up to a bar 5 minutes late?
No, you're still there from the night before.
Never leaves. All right, we talked about the Red Hot Seahawks earlier. Let's check in on the rest of the NFC West. The Cardinals did what the Cardinals do on Sunday. They overcame a second-half deficit and made a final stand to knock off the Chiefs, 17-14. Greg, the Cardinals keep losing big names, but the magic, it remains.
I'm glad they got this win and got to 10 wins, and this win was so symbolic of their whole season. Because you watch the whole thing, and you have no idea how they won the game, but at the end, they're celebrating the sum greater than the rest of the parts. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who's symbolic of that?
Who?
Larry Fitzgerald. When he's on the field, they win. When he's not on the field, they lose.
You know who's really symbolic of that? Kerwin Williams.
Mm. Kerwin.
And Robert Hughes. I mean, they were running out the clock with Kerwin Williams, who went over 100 yards today. Nice that they got a little running game. And then Robert Hughes with a big catch. And all these guys you never heard of, and it doesn't matter.
Well, and we heard the game that Andre Ellington is going to be shipped to IR. I mean, that running game has been a disaster for weeks. It's one of the worst in the league. So the 100-yard game is big news for Arizona.
And they came back for this. This is amazing that sixth time this year they trailed at halftime and they won the game. Stanton did kind of what he does on a good game, which is that he made some really impressive throws. He also missed a lot of throws. And then they had two key second-half turnovers. I mean, Alex Okafor was making plays for them, had an interception, and a big overturn call, which was very questionable on a Travis Kelce fumble that we'll probably hear about all
Kansas
week.
City season.
Do you know
has
Blandino?
Gone right into the abyss. I mean, it's been a terrible 3 or 4 weeks for them.
Yeah, they've lost three straight. They're not quite out of it at 7-6 either, but is this a team that you guys could see winning three in a row at this point?
It's hard to see that. We don't trust their passing game, And what does it say about their run defense that the worst running offense in the league rushed for 141 yards today?
What's special about them?
Jamal Charles is special, and he had a 63-yard run for a touchdown early that was awesome. And then he hurt his ankle, and he actually came back from the ankle injury and scored another touchdown, but he was very quiet in the second half. They barely gave him the ball, so that might be another injury that's a problem. The one thing I love about this team is Travis Kelce. Like, you can compare him to Gronkowski. It's not just that they both kind of look alike. He really plays like – I mean, he's unbelievable to watch and had one of his best games.
If you take him, and nothing against Alex Smith, but you put him with Tom Brady, Kelsey's probably an all-pro, right?
Oh, yeah. Why not? Alex Smith had a good game, too. It's like – but there's just not enough around him. Let's get rid of him.
Mark, you feel good about yourself?
I don't know. Why would I?
No, you picked the Cardinals to finish 9-7, and you picked them to win this game to go 10-6.
Well, that's how I operate. I told you I'm going to hedge my own bets. And who's sitting on top the picks standings with Dan Hansis? That's me. And that's because I picked the Cardinals.
We were talking about Mark's decision to pick the Cards and pick them to lose out. We decided it was subversive. It was Mark turning the industry on its ear and saying, don't take me seriously, or should you? Mark Sessler, iconoclast.
I think it's called think differently.
He's got a surprising Machiavellian streak.
I think it's more of an absurdist streak. You're just pointing out how ridiculous any of these picks are. No one cares except for us. You're right.
Gonzo.
All these things are correct.
Gonzo.
Kaufman. Sessler.
Mark's so close to just walking into the wilderness. For real. Forever.
I got 3 more weeks. I'm winning this picks thing, and I'm going to walk right into the sunset.
What
do we win?
Could we call that a dynasty? You won the first year.
Yep.
I won the second year. So if you could get 2 out of 3, that's big for your legacy.
That's not a dynasty yet.
Hey, TD, behind the glass, how you doing, buddy?
It's getting close.
It is.
What's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
Good. How's the Cave of Sadness sound effects coming along, by the way?
The Cave of Sadness? Yeah. We're getting there.
TD's voice, did you already forget Mark Sessler, Quiet Storm? I have to do more work now?
Yeah.
Oh, his voice was more, I totally forgot. What is the Cave of Sadness again? That's what the voice
no
was.
Idea what you're talking about.
You probably don't. Like,
playing along.
Maybe it was an episode he wasn't here.
Yeah.
Like half of them.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, that may be,
been
that
a little,
may be true.
A little you know, touch and go lately.
Yeah, that might have been the doctor appointment.
We'll go offline to talk about that. But basically, there's now a map similar to Game of Thrones, because you have the Mark's wilderness of happiness and curiosity, Wes's stable of boys, you have Greg's stable of boys.
Do I?
And yeah, you got a little
stable. That's how it started.
You got a little stable of boys. And then, of course, the Cave of Sadness, which various teams walk through. The Browns are there right now.
Oh,
the Jets have been there all season.
They got a penthouse.
What does Dan have?
I don't have anything.
Just a lot of hair care product.
A lot of hair care product. I do have something. Let me think about that. I kind of operate the Cave of Sadness, though. I decide who goes in and out.
You're the doorman.
All right. The bouncer at the Cave of
the
Sadness.
The key master.
That is grim. All right. Moving on. Elsewhere in the division, the best 5-7 team in the NFL history became the best 6-7 team in NFL history as the Rams recorded a 24-0 win over the lowly Redskins in D.C. That's back-to-back shutouts for St. Louis and their coach, Jeff Fisher, who delivered one of the great tweak jobs in NFL history before kickoff. Chris Wessling, tell us about it.
Picture me trolling. It was the best troll job ever. He sent out all 6 of the players acquired from the Robert Griffin III trade as the coin toss captains, trolling the entire Redskins organization.
Did the Redskins, you think, even notice that was happening?
You know how I know they didn't notice, though? Because whoever's operating the Vine account gleefully put up the whole midfield encounter, and we used it for our story. It's probably taken down by now, but we used it because they had no idea. They couldn't have known. Unless they're so against RG3 in that building now that they're all in on it, too.
Fascinating.
I'm sure Griffin doesn't love the little tweak job there. Wouldn't feel that good if I were
him. You know what? Play better.
It's one thing to troll him by sending the captains out, and it's another thing to do it and then shut your team out while Robert Griffin III is watching Colt McCoy and then has to come in and mop up time. I mean, that's ultimate.
Talk about Cave of Sadness.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing, though, by the way? Like, there are some nice players that came out to midfield. Well, let's calm down, Rams, too. Like, it's not like you went and turned into a dynasty off that trade, and these guys are the 6 greatest players in NFL history.
Well, how about
typical Les Snead greatness stuff? Like, how about real greatness? Let's win some games.
Let's compile a winning record. Then we can start throwing our selections of players out at midfield and downing teams in late December.
Well, they are going to do it. They're going to win out, go 9-7. This team that Wes has been doubting, you know, they're playing pretty well.
They're a franchise quarterback away from being a contender.
legit, like a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, they are very.
Over the last 6 weeks, they're first, I think, in takeaways and second in sacks. They have one of the best defenses in the NFL, as Greg said.
It's hard to shut teams out.
Yeah.
I mean, what they're doing, they dropped a 52-0 bomb a week ago.
You know how hard it is? It's first back-to-back shutouts for this franchise since they were the 1945 Cleveland Rams.
Wow.
And by the way, the Colt McCoy redemption angle, has that officially been put to rest?
He's exactly who we thought he was, a third-string quarterback who might be good enough to be a backup, but certainly is not a starter.
Well, we should point out, he hurt his neck late in this game. He had to go to the hospital afterwards to get it evaluated, so there's a very good chance that Robert Griffin III will be starting the last three games.
They should be starting Kirk Cousins, and we said that a few weeks ago. Kirk Cousins is the best quarterback on the team.
And he got RG3 got in this game at the very end. Did he throw the ball at all, or was it more just running out the clock scenario?
He completed three or four passes, and to the surprise of no one, took a sack.
Yeah, it was just running it out, basically.
In terms of most depressed fan bases right now, and as a Jets fan, we're definitely in the running. In terms of just the season alone, Redskins fans have it real bad. A lot of these embarrassing moments are happening in their building. The whole thing is like a disaster.
Especially after what they did last year, that you can double down and have a more embarrassing season this year.
They've had to go from thinking you have the guy in Robert Griffin III to what he is now, and you don't have those picks and you don't have a coach. I mean, they might be at the top for the most hapless franchises.
The most embarrassing moment of the day today was Tavon Austin's punt return touchdown, made it 24-0 late in the third quarter, and the home crowd started chanting for RG3.
Oh, no.
Apparently, having forgotten the last two games RG3 played.
It's almost as bad as when the 49ers crowd chanted for David Carr to come in when Troy Smith was at quarterback. That was a low moment.
All right. Elsewhere in the NFC West, there was only one team that lost in the division on Sunday. Who would have thought it could have been the team playing the freaking Raiders? The 49ers laid an epic egg at the Black Hole, falling to 7-6 after a 24-14 loss. This is the same Raiders team who lost 52-0 last week. Mark, I'm going to ask you a serious question here, so I would like a serious answer. Is it time to fork the 49ers?
I'd be fine doing that. After watching that game today, my takeaway was that when Greg Roman and Harbaugh hit San Francisco and developed that offense into what it was a couple seasons ago, I thought for myself they were the most fun, creative team to watch on that side of the ball. They are boring. They stink, and they are boring.
So you were happy with this outcome. I know you were saying in the newsroom, what you did not want was to see the 49ers in the playoffs, and you'd have to watch that.
I think they're a shell of their former selves in the sense they can't overpower teams with the run. Their passing game looks completely – we talk about Seattle's as a no-structure passing game. I see nothing in San Francisco that suggests anything that can't build rhythm. I mean, Derek Carr flat-out outplayed Colin Kaepernick. Very interesting timing coming right off the article that Wes wrote last week about running quarterbacks struggling and five executives saying they'd rather have Carr than Kaepernick. I don't know if that's premature, but looking at what happened today, Kaepernick is a big concern, and that entire offense seems lost. Jim Harbaugh is out.
Right, and he's going to have to start over with a new coach and a new offensive coordinator. Harbaugh can go coach up Carr. Maybe he was one of the five executives. He'll take him. He had to be watching this game thinking, all right, this isn't so bad.
I will say that, you know, there's some big surprise storylines this season. I think RG3's collapse into the abyss, into the cave of sadness is one. I think the Saints' struggles this season is another. Colin Kaepernick, like, etching into just another guy status is, to me personally, stunning. I never saw it coming.
I think part of it is their line is not what it was. And they simply cannot impose their will with the running game. When you can do those two, when those two things are intact, a lot of your quarterbacks in the league look a lot better.
They have no identity. That's a bad place to
be. They have no identity.
7-7. Oof. It's going to be a fun couple weeks here.
7-6.
I mean, 7-6.
Well, that may be prophetic. They play the Seahawks.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Seahawks are going to end their season and the Jim Harbaugh era in San Francisco.
Oof. I think Harbaugh wisely is getting out of there at the right time, though, to be honest.
I don't know if it's his choice, their choice, whatever. You still don't want to go out like this. Well, we talked. It's not like it's a total shock. We talked about this before the season, that if there's going to be a team that's kind of embroiled in dysfunction and misses the playoff that's been atop that perch, that this is kind of the prime candidate, and that's what's happened.
All right, so the Niners' loss is the Lions' gain in the NFC playoff race. Detroit delivered a balanced effort against the bad Bucks team, taking care of business in a 34-17 win. To talk about the Lions, we need to get on the line our Chicago correspondent, the man that spends a lot of time in the gym and a lot of time watching football film. And then, you know, if people get out of line, he takes care of business. If you catch my drift.
He is Main Street.
Kevin Patrick coming at you. What up, buddy?
Dan, it's so great to hear your voice. Mm. Now I know how Ringo Starr felt when they let him talk to John Lennon.
Wow. I like that. I really like the analogy.
Yeah,
by the way.
Maybe it if Ringo Starr was buff.
Oh, man. You're definitely hotter than Ringo Starr. A lot of looks talk today on around the NFL podcast.
Moving on.
Yeah. So anyway, Patches, the Lions broke a 9-game December losing streak here. Are they going to avoid that late season fade this time around?
Well, this was a game that I was – they lost to this same Bucs team last year, and this was a game that I was kind of a trap game that I was thinking that they could totally just come out and bomb. And they took care of business. And it started with their defensive line. Adamkin Sue led the team in tackles with 6 and was – always in the backfield.
He's playing well, huh?
Pull off the sack. Their defensive line just destroyed poor Josh McCown. I actually felt bad for the guy. He was getting hit at literally every time he dropped back. He was getting mauled.
So you're saying this Bucs passing game and this offense, maybe not a great look there without Jeff Tedford in the mix.
As Greg shoots daggers at Chris Wessling. Wow, that doesn't seem necessary.
No, that wasn't that. I'm just the Lions' defense like against the Bucks' passing game might be the biggest mismatch in the NFL possible.
It was a great point by Greg.
Oh boy.
Well, it's really up front. I mean, Vincent Jackson had 159 yards. Mike Evans had 2 touchdowns and got multiple penalties, pass interference penalties. When McCown got rid of the ball, had time to get rid of it. His receivers made plays, but he just didn't have enough time, and the running game is absolute crap.
Reggie Bush comes back, but he's not really the main running back. It's Joik Bell, who I think has been running great. How did Bush look back on the field? Like, does that concern you at all?
First of all, I wouldn't say Joik Bell has been great.
I think he's been very good in the second half of the season.
All right,
he's
guys.
Been okay. He gets one run a game, which he did today when Slavonte David was out. He had a busted 57-yarder. But they only had 56 yards on 30 other carries.
Mm. Ouch.
Reggie had one 12-yard gain. The rest of the time, it was 2 yards in fall. They tried to get him more involved in the screen game. He had a couple passes. Didn't really do much. He couldn't break a tackle. So,
Patra, if you're a Bucs fan, I would feel bad for anyone who is at this point. Outside of Mike Evans, give me something that the fan base can say there's some promise here. I mean, it is a disaster down there.
I really don't know. I really couldn't. That would be my go-to, is Evans and Jackson. They're a great pair together. Other than that, I mean,
well, Gerald McCoy and Levante David are all pro talent.
I mean, you have a couple pieces there, maybe 3 pieces that you could build around, and also they could have the number one pick in the draft.
Mm.
They're one of, I believe, 5 or maybe 6 teams now at 2-11 with 3 games to play.
I think that Lovie Smith's defense is a mistake with the talent with what they have. I don't think it works, and I think Megatron kind of proved that today. Second week in a row, he's at over 140 yards, just getting cushion, easy pitch and catch. Matthew Stafford didn't even have to look to Golden Tate because his number one option was open almost every play.
Johnson being Johnson again is a big deal.
Right. I mean, the Lions, to me, are one of the more predictable teams in the league. They're pretty consistent. I mean, they beat the bad teams. They look exactly what you think they are, which is like the 11th best team in the league that's going to make the playoffs and then lose to a better team in the playoffs. But these last 2 weeks to put up 34-17 wins against bad teams, it's a very good sign because that's all they really need to do to make the playoffs.
All right, Patrick, it's shoulder day. Go get to work, buddy.
All right, fellas. That's tomorrow. Thanks.
Hey, TD, by the way.
What's happening?
Megatron feeling himself again. He might get to that 25 touchdown
mark. Hey, only about 15 away, or maybe 20 away.
It's not too late. It's never too late. All right, let's swing over to the wide open and utterly bizarre NFC South. The New Orleans Saints have now lost 4 straight games at the Superdome, and this time it was a total embarrassment. The Panthers whooped them 41-10 to move into the thick of the division race. I would say this, and Greg, because you love New Orleans so much, I'll say this to you, and you give me your opinion. Outside of Bounty Gate, this is the low point of the Sean Payton era in NOLA. It's got to be, right?
Yes, there's no doubt. I mean, they weren't throwing bottles from the upper deck or booing lustily before halftime, after halftime, that I can think of in any other time. Now, that whole Bounty Gate season, That's a pretty big low. You can't just throw that out.
Well, I said
that's
outside.
Pretty bad. Yeah. Other than that, you're
feel
right.
Like I covered myself there.
Dan asked us downstairs. I mean, Sean Payton, is there a chance he doesn't coach this team next season?
There have been, you know, speculation from people that maybe he could be elsewhere, like Dallas, if that job came open. I think it would be more him wanting to get out than I don't think there's any way the ownership would want to get rid of Sean Payton just because of one disastrous year.
This was so bad, and this was a game that was a complete one-sided affair from the kickoff on. And if you're the Panthers, if you're a Panthers fan and you're excited about the team back in the race, I kind of get it because Cam Newton looked like Cam Newton again. Wes, I think you call he looked like a preening schmo as well after his Superman score that touched
what
off
a, clown.
A fracas behind
stop,
the end zone.
Stop with the preening. You're a quarterback.
He went a little over the top. Not just that, throughout the game because they had the game in hand. He was really enjoying himself, but you know he deserved it.
I'm glad he got hit.
He played one of the best games in recent memory for him. He threw three touchdown passes, no interceptions, added 83 yards on the ground and a touchdown. And, you know, this is a Saints team that ran for – or a Panthers team that ran for 271 yards on the road.
That's like last year's formula.
Yeah, and Jonathan Stewart looked awesome again. He had a 69-yard touchdown run on the in the first minute of the second half that basically put the game away, made it 31-3. The Saints offense, again, this is a week after Drew Brees threw for five touchdowns. Again, no connection with Jimmy Graham, which was odd. He's not healthy. And they left him in the game the whole game. I don't know if it was to get some stats at the end, but he was taking shots, and they kept him in the game. I found that was weird. The Saints just all bad, bad vibes around this team, and it's not looking good.
I think it's cool that we're going to get a 6-win playoff team. I mean, I really do.
What does it say about Paddleboat Ron and Mike Shula that it took a D'Angelo Williams injury to find out that the best running back on their roster is Jonathan Stewart?
Yeah, it's annoying, but they are running the ball well. They did it well against Minnesota. They did it against New Orleans. They get Tampa next week. They've got a shot. Then they have Cleveland in Carolina, and then they're at Atlanta. We've been saying that Atlanta-New Orleans game is going to decide the NFC South, and I still think it will. But if Atlanta could go to New Orleans and win, then maybe it's that Atlanta-Carolina game that decides it in Week 17.
Here's an interesting scenario. What if this NFC South doormat hosts a playoff game against Drew Stanton?
I don't know.
They could very well have 6-foot team could go into the second round of the playoffs.
Can we just give the team that's going to play them the next week the bye? They just wipe them out, give the winner of that NFC that would meet them. Just take them out, give them the win, move them on to the
save
NFC
Save airfare,
game.
Save yeah. on a lot of, you know, structural costs.
I'm just
that's
trying to
idea.
Save money. I'm
like
a company
that.
Man.
It's good.
No or yes?
No, the sound principle of just saving cash and dough by not even having that game occur is nice.
And by the way, the Fort Committee is going to get together, I think, Monday about 6 a.m. in a conference room. It's going to be Danish and coffee, some other things. But, again, I'm going to throw it out there. I am nominating the New Orleans Saints.
To just so to fork the entire division.
Just fork the entire yeah. division.
Well, then Greg has to give to a charity again.
Well, that's good. Greg
well,
needs
gives
to
Greg
be
another
doing
chance
more of
to
that
talk
anyways.
About it. Oh, you know, whenever I could think about people in need and I could step in and make a play, I'll do it.
I'm just happy that all those articles this week talking about the Saints running the table were made to look as stupid as they should have.
I totally messed up, guys. We keep going.
Why? Yeah, I just like a little music yeah, in the background.
Yeah. Just
nice.
Just keep going, yeah.
Why not?
I mean, it's a great song. Obviously,
it is.
It's a classic. Is this Dylan?
Joe Satriani.
All right, let's move on. You might as well just keep the music on now.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Keeping it.
All right, good. Jairus Wright's 87-yard touchdown reception.
Who?
Jairus Wright? Excuse me. Jairus. now we're really putting you to work, TD.
I know. Can't do a couple of things at once, guys. Too much.
TD batting 147 right now. So, Jairus Wright's 87-yard touchdown reception from Teddy Bridgewater in overtime. Now you pull the music out?
Fading it out, man.
I'm just starting
Fading
the read.
Out.
I'm just starting the read of the game.
You're very
you
mysterious.
Want, you want to come
it's
do
compelling.
This, Dan?
No, just like, wow. You know what? Wow. Just do the job. Let's go. Jairus Wright's 87-yard touchdown reception from Teddy Bridgewater in overtime gave the Minnesota Vikings a 30-24 win over the New York Jets. Wright took a wide receiver screen on third down, broke one tackle, took it to the house. The Jets fall to 2-11. and are now in a five-way tie for the worst record in the NFL. Suck for Duck.
You want them to lose out, right?
It's a weird position. I don't like when people do that kind of stuff, but I have to admit it. I'm so desperate for a quarterback now, and I've heard so many good things about Marcus Mariota. I just want it. I want it so bad that I don't care if they lose.
So this was one of the biggest losses of the year. I mean, this was a huge game today for the Jets.
It was great. They did a great job. No, this was, first of all, Geno Smith, and it's almost comical. It is comical. It's straight comical. 6 days after they put the handcuffs on him and gave him had him throw 8 pass attempts in the first 58 minutes of a game in prime time, they give him the ball to throw on the first play from scrimmage, and what does he do? He shobs it. Pick six.
No.
He throws a pick six. To his credit, and I will say.
Well, he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, he showed some gumption here. He actually played very well by Geno standards the rest of the game. Kept them in the game, but the same old Jets problems surfaced here. They were 0-for-5 in the red zone, punching it in for touchdowns. There was a huge Chris Ivory fumble. Cumbie, my boy Cumbie, who's dropped off the face of the earth. I might have to kick him out of. I have a side stable behind Wes and Greg's stable. It's very small, and Cumbie basically
just
hangs out.
It only has Jeff Cumberland in it.
It's not very well. It's not well lit or anything.
You all have stables.
Yeah,
you've got Andy Dalton.
You have an entire forest,
huh? Well, yeah. I'm not liking to put people into servitude and have them live in a stable. They can live free where they want to live.
Anyway, so yeah, the Jets can't do anything in the red zone, and on the Vikings side of the ball. Your boys.
Yeah, don't think that Mark and I haven't noticed that Charles Johnson has single-handedly turned Teddy Bridgewater's rookie season around.
Yeah, I mean, he had a nice game today. I will give you that. Now he's played a nice game. He went over 100 yards. He had a touchdown. How many 100-yard games has he had in his career before this?
Probably zero. He had an 80-yard game 2 weeks ago, though.
All right.
Dan begrudgingly authored a bullet point about Charles Johnson.
I tweeted when it happened. I said, you know, this guy, he's making some plays today. It's clear that he's the favorite target of Teddy. At least today he was. And Cordarrelle Patterson, Johnson took his spot in the lineup, barely played. When he got in the game on special teams, he fumbled a kickoff and bobbled another kick.
Didn't have a target. What is going on?
An absolute disaster.
Our number one making the leap candidate.
And to Teddy Bridgewater, I will say this, made some plays, and on the game-winning play in overtime, the Jets went into a formation where they had a zero safety. It was Rex getting aggressive, and Teddy Bridgewater saw that, audibled into the wide receiver screen that led to the 87-yard score.
Veteran Teddy.
So growing up a little bit, Teddy, Vikings fans get a little excited about that. They looked good today.
I was joking about Charles Johnson, but Teddy Bridgewater has more wins than all the rest of the rookie quarterbacks combined.
309 yards and 2 touchdowns in only 27 attempts. He's been nice.
Would you take him over any other rookie quarterback?
I said last week I would take him to win a game this week for sure over the other guys.
I agree with that.
Long term, I don't know.
Long term, I'm sticking with Bortles.
All right, while we're here, let's check in with the other depressing New York-based franchise, the New York Giants, who bounced back from an embarrassing loss to the Jaguars, and they whipped up on the Titans 36-7. We got to get our boy from New Jersey, live from a New Jersey haunted mansion. He is the former beat reporter for the New York Giants. He watches game closely for us, and he will now tell us about it. How are you, Connor Orr?
I'm doing well. How's everybody out there?
Good. I guess one thing I just want to say is just tell us about Odell Beckham. What else do we really want to hear about from this game? Tell us about Odell Beckham.
I said that there should be no more Giants games for the rest of the season. It should just be like Odell Beckham feats of strength. You know, I mean, they had him throw like a 60-yard flea flicker pass. Like he overthrew a guy from midfield. He almost hit the back, like the first row of seats. It was ridiculous. So I mean, he's extremely talented, and you know, when he had like 10 receptions at the half, so. He's really the only thing worth watching in that entire game, and really for the rest of the Giants season. He's immensely talented, and I think now it's a little too late, but they're starting to move him around a lot, which is exciting. You know, he's in the slot. He started in the backfield a lot today, so too little too late, but at least fun to watch in the meantime.
Connor, I've got a question for you. Pick one of these answers. Odell Beckham is the greatest player in the history of the NFL or the greatest athlete in the history of humankind?
That's the problem when you get like a player like that in New York. Like, it just gets ruined.
He really is that good.
You know, I mean, you know, you read the stories, whatever. He's the son of a Olympic sprinter and a football player, and then his stepfather is an Olympic sprinter. So, you know, he really has no excuse. In my mind right now, he's underachieving with those kind of teams, you know.
Well, the stepfather's a bit of a stretch. What, this guy's showing him technique or something? Give me a break.
Yeah, there's secret training. There's stuff that you and I don't have access to, certainly.
Connor, you know. I go back to the fact that he was inactive for the first month of the year, and I've long said that it would be wise for Greg next season to give all of us the first 4 or 5 weeks of the year. We don't operate, we don't work. Agree or disagree?
That would be if that would happen in my second year, that'd be fantastic.
All right, you can do it all while they're off.
Nicely done, Mark.
You might have to venture out on some non-Giants games at some point, but you know, it'd be fun.
Do you have anything to share?
That's cool. Unfamiliar territory is all right with me.
Do you have anything to share about the Titans?
Who are the Titans?
Oh, Zach Mettenberger got hurt, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they need to block for him at some point. You know, I think that would be.
Wait, what was,
point,
what's
they
that?
Need to get, they need to get. That's some
a that's
sort of
a that's a haunted ghost. And listen.
That was good,
Connor. You got to get that taken care of, bro.
Connor, seriously, tighten things up.
Tighten up your ghost game in your house.
I know.
TD and I had a spirited IM conversation during this entire segment, arguing when to drop in the ghost sound effect, by the way.
I got this, Dan. I got it.
I like how it's become an interesting subplot to the whole podcast. Like, everyone's like, it's you're revealing a little bit of my haunted mansion every week.
Well, we're concerned for you.
It's true. I mean, really, it's just a matter of time before we stop hearing from Connor in a paranormal activity scenario.
And then you'll have to find somebody else to watch the cruddy Giants game.
Oh, well, then we got to send the Ghostbusters over there. Somebody's got to watch the Giants for the next
How
three
close
weeks.
Are you to the Amityville house?
Like an hour and a half. So, oh. I mean, you know, any sort of chaos theory.
Ghost travel.
Might be plausible.
The biggest takeaway I had from Connor's call this week was he's not far away from the Amityville house.
There you go.
All right. Connor Orr, thank you very much. Stay safe, buddy.
Thank you.
Let's move on and check in with the Houston Texans, who are still hanging around in the back end of the AFC playoff race. They knock off the Jacksonville Jaguars 27-13 on the road. The Texans have won 3 of 4. Big matchup with Indianapolis on tap. Mark, is it possible the Texans will hang around in this race until Christmas, or is next week the game where it just disappears?
I think it's going to disappear at some point. I clearly agitated Greg at some stage.
At some point.
This week to
give
get
the man
this
an
game.
Answer.
What?
He asked you a question. Is it happening
I'm
next week?
I'm irritated that I was assigned this game.
Well, you know, you would have complained about – I could have given you the Rams again. You would have complained about that. You
that
know,
was my they're... biggest takeaway from this
are
game.
You, Greg, are you saying that perhaps Mark is becoming an issue?
Well, he's trying to make up for on the podcast all this brown nosing, but behind the scenes, a lot of little daggers.
Well, that's not – none of that is accurate, what you just mentioned. When I look at the Texans, I mean, they basically just – they rode Arian Foster today. He did 88 yards before the half, finished with 127. You know, 1 week after throwing 6 touchdowns, which was obviously a complete and total mirage from Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Miragey,
you're right. 13 of 19, 135 yards. It was just a – listen, the Texans are kind of a scrappy 8-8 type team that if everything fell right, they win maybe 9 games. They're not going to the playoffs, no.
Sounds right.
They have 7 wins this year, and the best quarterback they've beaten is about to be benched for Johnny Manziel.
Right. They're every year there's a couple teams that disprove the coach's cliche that, oh, it's hard to win a game in the NFL. It's the hardest thing to do a sport. No, it's just as easy as any other sport. One team wins every single game, and the Texans are 7-6. That's proof that it's not that hard to
hardest
win.
Hardest thing
game.
I ever did in my life is win a game at this level. This game, life is hard in the NFL. You got to earn it. Bury the balls.
Tony Sperano talking about.
Was that your Joe Philbin?
I think when I said bury the balls.
Oh. Of course, a yes. Raiders reference to Sperano.
Joe Philbin is an IBM executive, as you said. There would be no intensity in his voice.
I saw Philbin once at the scouting combine walking down a carpeted hallway with a white turtleneck
That's
over like over cords. those pants that are, that make that sound when you scratch
like
your legs.
Khakis, maybe. Really, he was wearing corduroys,
cords, and a white turtleneck, if my memory serves, and nothing else.
Is that a Connecticut thing? You calling them cords, corduroy pants?
No,
cords is a thing.
Cords is a thing.
It's a human thing, Dan. It's called taking a long word and shortening it to make conversation
yeah,
easier.
Yeah, because corduroy is so painful to say. Cords or corduroy in your life growing up?
None.
I've heard both.
As you can see, we're really plugged in on the Texans' chances.
J.J. Watt, 5 QB hits, 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss. Give the man the MVP.
I agree.
I might win that sandwich yet. Where's Von Miller and DeMarco at? They're probably like 13 sacks combined, right?
They're not
MVPs.
No,
they have more than that.
I know, I'm kidding.
Von Miller is 13 himself, I think.
It's 13 and 10, I believe. All right, the Denver Broncos. And Peyton Manning, who was held without a touchdown pass for the first time in 51 weeks of play. It didn't matter, though. They beat the Bills 24-17 in Denver. C.J. Anderson continues to be a waiver wire godsend for fantasy owners. Scored 3 touchdowns from in close in this game. The Bills' playoff hopes, they seem to be on life support with an unforgiving schedule ahead. Right, guys?
Life support? That's awfully generous of you.
Well, like, you know,
well, they're 7-6.
Their playoff hopes are dead.
They're 7-6, but
no, the Jets' playoff hopes are dead. The Bills are 7-6. They could run the table.
Yeah, we know
in
they
a
could.
Wild
not
universe.
Going to the playoffs.
No, they could.
In a wild universe.
Because Kyle Orton is their quarterback, they're not going to beat the Packers and the Patriots.
Speaking of which, by the way, Kyle Orton played terrible in this game. And Wes, you said it downstairs when I brought it up. Like, if E.J. Manuel can't get into this game in a must-win scenario where the game was there for the taking, the Broncos didn't play very well in this game. They were out of sync. The Bills had plenty of opportunities. And you know what? They just didn't they didn't have the quarterback that could really make it happen. E.J. Manuel can't get off the bench. So it tells you a lot about where Doug Marrone stands on E.J. Manuel in year two.
Well, Orton's led him to this point, and it'd be weird to go back, I think.
To the middle.
Well, to their best season in how many years?
Orton going to Orton.
So you're saying it's a similar situation to the Browns, where a team that's been losing so much doesn't want to leave the guy that's got them a little better than average.
I think Orton's been a bigger factor in their success overall, that he's been solid, that he improved the passing game from just the bottom of the barrel.
Well, you also like switching quarterbacks, unless you're really just a team in total chaos like the Titans or Jets or something. I mean, you don't want to throw a guy in there that's had no reps all week. I mean, that's part of it is like they didn't get blown out in this game. I mean, the score was deceiving, though, Dan. Is that the point?
No, I mean, it wasn't deceiving. It was a one-touchdown game, and it should have been a game that the Bills could have stole.
I mean, they had 24 first downs to the Broncos' 15. Peyton Manning, you mentioned the stat on him. Is there any concern about how Manning's played?
I would be a little concerned. The second half, Manning has been a very up-and-down, topsy-turvy quarterback, and he threw 2 interceptions in this game. He's got 11 now in the season. He's not going to win MVP this year. That's going to someone else. I know he has bigger things that he's trying to attain at this stage of his career. But the if you look at his game log over the past, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, there are a lot of games where his, you know, the passer rating's around hovering around 80. He's not nearly as dominant a player as he was this time last year. And the way some of those passes float, including one interception that stands out to me from this game, you got to think that maybe that arm strength is really becoming an issue to the point where it's taking his game down a level and he can't just outthink the opponents.
When I tweeted the stat that he had his lowest passer rating in 5 years today and his lowest completion percentage last week, Broncos fans, dozens of them, got back to me and said, no big deal. They want to run the ball. It's not – look, they're winning games. This means nothing. I think it means something. It means he's not playing well. And with him, you always have to worry about his arm strength.
And it's all relative. Even in all these games he's not playing well, I mean, he's throwing – like today he threw for 8.6 yards per attempt. They're moving the ball through the air. But I think if you're a Broncos fan, you should be concerned that Manning's 4 worst games of the season have come in the last 6 weeks.
Of his worst games in a Broncos uniform.
It's inarguable. So that's a trend, and you'd like to see that turn around before the end of the regular season.
So we saw what the Broncos did. Now let's move to Sunday Night Football, where the New England Patriots keep themselves in great position to claim that top seed. They take care of business in a very impressive way, beat the Chargers 23-14 at Qualcomm Stadium, a stadium filled with Patriots fans. Bad job by Chargers fans and good job by Patriots fans filling up that building. But this was a game in which the Patriots took control about midway through and just rolled 20 unanswered points. Chris Wessling, This Patriots team bounced back very well from a tough loss at Lambeau Field, didn't they?
Should have been 30 unanswered points at least. They had the pick six from Devin McCourty that was negated by
garbage
one of the
call.
Most suspect calls we've seen.
Yeah,
garbage.
And Tom Brady threw a really bad red zone interception that could have been a field goal or touchdown at the end of the second half. It seemed like the Patriots were in control most of the night.
What a night when the three of you are getting upset about bad calls against the Patriots. I was just sitting back and enjoying that little slice of business.
They went in Brandon Browner, who's gotten penalized plenty for deserving reasons because he can't keep his hands off receivers. But in this case, he went. The ball was bobbled by Ladarius Green, the Making the Leap candidate, unfortunately. And in comes Browner, shoulder right on his pads. It knocks him out. He gets a concussion. And because it was such a violent hit, they threw the flag. They got to review that stuff. Well, let's get back to the game. I mean, it drives me crazy. That was a 7-point swing.
I think it shows that the Patriots can win games in different types of ways, which is what you would want to see if you're a Patriots fan, because Tom Brady didn't really have that great a night for three quarters. He had probably one of his worst games of the year. The pass rush was getting to him. They don't have Chandler Jones or Dont'a Hightower in this game, arguably their best two players in the front seven, and yet the defense really dominated. I mean, they were sending blitzes. The secondary had a great night. It was probably their best defensive performance of the entire season.
They're good enough, and they're so well coached, they can back themselves out of corners mid-game. They figure out how to do. Other teams need to go, we'll look at the film later and figure out what happened. New England is just going to coast to the end of the year. There was an overflow, a bubbling up of childlike joy coming from Greg's cubicle during this
game.
That's not true.
Are you prepared to concede that the Dolphins aren't going to win the AFC East?
Let's give the AFC East to the Patriots. I'm fine with that. I don't think it's
the 7,000th time.
Let's give the number one seed to the Patriots.
No.
Yeah. Well, they deserve it.
Let's talk about who the Patriots play the rest of the way.
Miami, who killed them earlier.
They never lose at Foxborough.
You can't just say they'll never lose at Foxborough.
They've won, like, what, 90% of their games?
They are not getting swept by Miami.
It wouldn't be the craziest thing ever if they lost to Miami or Buffalo. But you're right. I think they're the heavy favorite now for the one
seed. Their one road game left is against the Jets, who are feckless.
Is that week 17?
No, that's 16.
Week 16. Yeah.
Okay, is it the last Jets home game? There will be a little pop for the Jets playing for Rex by the end of the season.
A little pop.
But not enough to be the Patriots.
Yeah,
they could lose one of those games.
LeGarrette
so
Blunt
right.
is going to run 320 yards.
Yeah, I mean, you still have Geno involved. But, yeah, I could see them losing one game. But the way they're playing at such a high level that they're going to just roll.
Well, you're trained by Bill Belichick and these Patriots teams that they're going to play their best in December, that they're going to end peaking.
Trained.
And that's the way they are playing. So if we looked at previous years, they wouldn't blow one of these. But I'm just saying Miami and Buffalo have enough weapons to give them.
Talk about trained. Belichick has these robots who play under him. And by Greg's reaction, we know the fans are actually brainwashed as well. 1 week at a time. It's not really over.
Greg, you were getting a little misty-eyed talking about Julian Edelman and how important he is to this offense.
I think Edelman is as valuable for them as Welker was in his prime and Troy Brown was in his prime.
141 Welker. Yards and yeah. a touchdown.
Welker was Welker. Averaging like 120 receptions and 1,400 yards.
It's not all about numbers sometimes. You know that.
And right. But
for this offense, I think if you took Welker away, it wouldn't be as devastating as taking Gronk away, but I just don't see how they would exist
they
without
would plug him and Dola in and click on all cylinders.
No, and he's not making plays after the catch. He makes a lot of plays on his own. You got to give
him that. You surprised me with your Danny Amendola support. You seem to think that guy is just one opportunity away from fulfilling his potential.
He would have a 1,000-yard season if Edelman wasn't there. They would just plug him into the slot. He can't play outside receiver, and he's forced to play in other positions because Edelman is the slot guy.
All right.
So I enjoy Greg's attempt at suggesting New England's got a rough road ahead. They are best team in the AFC right now.
Absolutely, and they just survived the roughest road possible. This was really kind of the end of this streak where you played – three straight AFC first-place teams, then the Packers, then the Chargers, and they only lost one, and that was in Green Bay. It came through with fine colors. Celebration.
You know what? A lot of what this is about with Greg is that he knows what's coming. February 1st, 34-24, Packers over Pats, and it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit next to you guys during a Super Bowl. I hope they get there, but I don't want to sit next to you guys.
Fair enough. All right, that's it for another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. We will be back on Wednesday with another great show of goodness. talking about everything that's happening in the NFL. Thank you for listening. Check us out however you want to check us out. But Stitcher is a great way to do it. iTunes, you know. Leaving those comments, which you guys are doing a great job. Maybe we'll read one of those on Wednesday's show. That'll be fun.
Tell your grandmothers about us. Friends,
nah,
the holiday
don't
season.
Don't worry about the grandmas, but tell your uncles, like uncles your buddy, the buddy from high school, all that stuff.
The grandmas will get my references. Tell them.
All right, tell the grandmas. All right, this is Dan Hansa signing off for the Sizzler, the mailman, the boss, and Tay Day behind the glass. Ooh, jaunty.
I like this kind of party. I like this kind of party, baby.
It's your boy.
TV on fire.
All I know is you mess with me, you got problems. That's all I know.
This is why you lift all them weights.
What the hell's going on out here?
On fire.